Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has often stated that what he says is what he means. That's a declaration which can and really should be applied to the U.S. Constitution rather than perpetrating this fantasy that it's a so-called living, breathing document, which could be manipulated to serve a certain purpose du jour. That all ties together in one specific element in the race for the GOP presidential nomination, whether Texas Senator Ted Cruz is eligible to run for and serve as president of the United States. My next guest says, legally and constitutionally, he is not. She is a constitutional law professor at Widener University's Delaware Law School, Professor Mary Bridget McManaman. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Terrific to have you here and very educational. Well, first and foremost, we have links to both over at our website, as well as to Widener University, which is widener.edu. Professor McManaman had a column in the Washington Post in January, which was a summation of a more lengthy paper that she wrote on this topic. And let us start with the foundational of this, Professor. It's Article 2, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution, which reads as follows. No person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president. Neither shall any person be eligible to that office who shall not have attained the age of 35 years and been 14 years a resident within the United States. The key phrase in that section is natural-born citizen, which, considering the fact that that is the one and only time in the entire U.S. Constitution that that phrase appears, and it, as that standalone, it's there, but how do we determine its specific foundation and definition?
The Supreme Court has given us guidance on that. When the Constitution takes up a common law term, and there are many of them in the Constitution, such as ex post facto law or trial by jury, natural born citizen is another one. What we're supposed to do is take a look at what the common law says about it. And when you go to the common law, the definition of natural born citizen is easy. It's that you have to be born within the territory of the sovereign.
So where people are blending or making concrete out of the abstract, they're taking the idea of naturalized citizen and inserting it into the concept of natural-born citizen in this case.
Yes, and they're actually opposites. I mean, in the common law, at birth, you were either considered a natural-born citizen or an alien. And naturalization only applies to aliens to bring them into the fold to get rid of the legal disabilities that they suffer from not being natural-born.
Found this remark. This was from the U.S. Supreme Court, I believe, 1780. It might have been a little bit after 1787, but this was the reading from the comments from the Supreme Court. In this, as in other respects, it must be interpreted in light of the common law, the principles and history of which were familiarly known to the framers of the Constitution. So the Supreme Court, even though they're that's a question, too. Have there been rulings by any higher court which have created questions that have brought about this situation?
No. The court, of course, has never had to deal with a question about a presidential candidate.
But as far as citizenship, because I'm thinking it was 1899, but it was a reverse situation where there are Chinese parents who had children, and the question came whether the children were natural-born citizens of the United States.
Right. I was just going to say that the court has ruled on what is citizenship and what is natural-born citizenship a number of times in a different context. And what the court there, that you're talking about the Wong Kim Ark case.
Right.
And that the court wrote a very scholarly, lengthy discussion of what citizenship means and in particular what natural-born citizenship means. And they very clearly set out exactly what I was just telling you, that is, you have to be born in the United States, and if you are born in the United States, then you are, in fact, a natural-born citizen.
It was James Madison who was basically he had a major hand in the Constitution overall, but this was part of his sole effort on this section, if I'm correct.
Yes, he was, after writing the Constitution, he entered Congress, and there's a lot of debate over our first two naturalization acts, one in 1790 and one in 1795. And the one in 1790, when you read the legislative history, the discussions of the legislators talking about what they want in the Naturalization Act, a couple of guys say, you know, we've got to provide for kids born out of the country to American parents, which would be the common law, that you would naturalize them. And so they passed a statute that would naturalize children born abroad to American parents. And they, in the 1790 Act, the Congress used the phrase natural born. And Madison is on record on the floor of the House saying Congress doesn't have any right to determine or to act on natural born citizens. And he was assigned the task of rewriting the statute. And in 1795, he rewrote it and took the natural born phrase out, indicating that the children born abroad are naturalized. They're aliens at birth, but they're naturalized at birth.
And that's interesting. When I read comments in online articles, or I've brought this up in a few instances on our Facebook page, which you can get to at issuesandideasradio.com. And again, that selective history comes into play where people take the first part of the 1790 document and don't want to move it forward to when natural born was reinsert when Madison did the edits and the changes that he did.
Right. They all focus on that and ignore the fact that natural born has never, ever, ever again appeared in one of our statutes.
Talking with Professor Mary Bridget McManaman, who is a constitutional law professor at Widener University's Delaware Law School. Widener.edu is their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. This brings about some, you know, history is a lot of fun. You become a detective in a way. And I found this. This was a letter sent by John Jay to George Washington and probably to the other delegates, the Constitutional Conventions, dated July 25th, 1787. And maybe this was the root of why that part of Section 2 came to be. This is Jay writing to Washington. Permit me to hint whether it would be wise and seasonable to provide a strong check to the admission of foreigners into the administration of our national government, and to declare expressly that the command in chief of the American army shall not be given to nor devolve on but any but a natural born citizen.
Yeah, I think that's very telling. The first draft coming out of the Constitutional Convention about the presidency just referred to the president as a citizen, not a natural-born citizen, but a citizen. And we know that Washington received that letter. He wrote an answer back saying, thank you for your hint. And 2 days after Washington thanks Jay for his hint, the phrase natural-born citizen is inserted into the Constitution. So we don't have the smoking gun, but it seems to me that there's a pretty strong argument for cause and effect.
Mentioned in the introduction how people want to manipulate the came up with the term living, breathing document. How out of the sense of reality has the idea expressed really when you study the roots of it, natural-born citizen, the Constitution, how much of it, of that idea has been reinterpreted, misunderstood, even by people of education? I mean, is it not clear to enough significant people that it's what's creating the confusion and creating the challenges right now?
Well, I'm not so sure. I certainly learned in grade school that you had to be born in the United States to be president of the United States. And what's interesting is since my Washington Post op-ed appeared, I've received numerous emails from people all saying the same thing, that they were born abroad to American parents, but they knew that the one thing they could never be was president. I think what happened was in the late 20th century, there were a number of articles that were written on behalf of various candidates. There was one written in the 50s of somebody who was a supporter of FDR Jr., who was born in Canada. And then there was at least one written in support of George Romney, who was born in Mexico. And since that time, the pundit class, if you will, has sort of had this discussion. But I'm not so sure that the everyday American people don't think or realize that you have to be born in the United States.
And if I remember right, too, America doesn't recognize a dual citizenship. If you are from France, for example, and you apply for American citizenship, as far as America is concerned, you are then not a natural born, obviously, but a naturalized American citizen.
Yeah, but my understanding, I'm not an expert in naturalization law as it applies today, but my understanding is that America in the late 20th century did relax it and allows people to hold dual citizenship at this point.
Well, this does, for all the bluster that he's accused of, even I think his detractors have to realize that in this case, Donald Trump does have a legal point in not bringing the professor into the politics of everything, but should, hypothetically, Ted Cruz become the GOP nominee, I think you would be naive to imagine that the Democrats would not approach this in a legal matter as well. So, again, take it as a point in the time for self-education. We've linked to Professor McManaman's article, which was in January's Washington Post, as well as a link to her more detailed paper for you to study. And found a couple of historical documents. Maybe I'll put that over the download page, too, just to give you a full spectrum of the what the history and the facts of history dictate to the understanding of that phrase, natural-born citizen. As well, you can visit the website for Widener University at widener.edu. She is a constitutional law professor at Widener University's Delaware Law School. Professor Mary Bridget McManaman, thank you so much for the education, for being here this morning.
My pleasure.